This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, we're going to be talking about counterterrorism. A new strategy was just put out not really too long ago, about maybe a few weeks ago, a new grand strategy that the president and his administration put out about how that we are going to deal with terrorism and terrorism issues. You know, we're going to talk about that today, this national strategy for counterterrorism. Talk about what the U.S. is doing, about what we're doing good and what we're doing bad, and how we can possibly improve as we think about dealing with Al-Qaeda and a number of Al-Shabaab and a number of other terrorist threats around the world. I have with me in the studio is Dr. Christopher C. Harmon, and he's the Matthew C. Horner, the Major General Matthew C. Horner Distinguished Chair of Military Theory at the Marine Corps University, and is co-sponsored by the Marine Corps University Foundation. I wanted to make sure I got all that right, Chris.
Thank you, Derek.
Thanks for coming on Fed Access. You're down there with the Marines. I'm a former Marine, so you got carte blanche on the show right now to kind of talk about whatever you want to talk about. But I know you're teaching down there about terrorism, and I know you think teaching about counterterrorism. We had you on the show before because you and a couple other people wrote the book about how terrorism ends.
Yes, Sebastian Gorka over at National Defense University, and then another federal employee, Andrew Nicholas Pratt in Garmisch at the Marshall Center, and I combined to do a book called A Grand Strategy Against Terrorism. So that came out a year ago. But what's our opportunity today is as you say, from the publication by the White House of a brand new document at the very end of June called the National Strategy for Counterterrorism. And it's something of interest to the whole community, I think, the Marines, but also all of Washington.
You know, I want to have a real conversation about this because I know you have studied it. I know that, you know, there's a number of authors on this report, and maybe you know some, maybe not. But when you read through the report and you kind of looked at this overall kind of strategy that is now in place. Now, we're at a time where we said that, you know, Al-Qaeda, everyone is saying that Al-Qaeda's on the run. Bin Laden's been killed. And, you know, so all the press and all the media and all the administration keeps on talking about Al-Qaeda's on the run. But my concern is I still keep seeing attacks. I still keep seeing a lot of devastation going on across the world. And so when you read this report and this strategy, what is your first thought?
Well, I think my thoughts are a bit in line with yours in the sense that I think the document is a little bit too optimistic. It's 19 pages. There's a lot of aspects to it that we'll get to in our show, and it's a fascinating document. But it's not, I don't think, a really strong one, and I do believe that it's a little too optimistic. For example, it twice says that Osama bin Laden was the only leader that Al-Qaeda has ever known. That's an unusual way to put it, and because I've been thinking for years and talking with students about al-Zawahiri as the obvious successor. He's in power now, and just in the last day or so, in fact, Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb has pledged their allegiance to al-Zawahiri as the new leader. So I think we've got a continuing problem with Al-Qaeda. We've got a Taliban organization that is not being destroyed, a Taliban organization that's operating on several hundreds of millions of dollars a year just in dope money, let alone Pakistani support. So this is an example
of that, do they, Chris? They don't realize how much this is an organized crime. Almost syndicate, where they're dealing with drug money, they're dealing with drugs, they're dealing with human trafficking and other things in order to finance their operations.
Yeah, the Hezbollah organization in Latin America and other places is deeply into the drug business. People are aware, I think, that FARC in Colombia is, but not so much that ELN is, another major Colombian group. And Taliban is really a later comer in this respect. Several years ago, the United Nations published a report which kind of took me by surprise, saying 90 to 100 million a year in dope money is made by Taliban. But now Gretchen Peters, a very respected journalist, has got a second edition of her book out, Seeds of Terror, in which she says, no, it's more like 400 million a year.
Wow.
So you're talking about a group with some real financial muscle.
With all of that, you know, and as we look at this strategy and we look at kind of maybe the threat is still there and maybe, you know, it plays to administrations to say, hey, listen, we're dealing with terrorism. And that's, you know, that's part of the politics of D.C., I would probably say. But the truth of it is, do you feel like the threat that we are facing, do you feel like it is a growing threat or it is kind of now slowly but surely fading away?
I'm in the middle of those two standards. I do notice some of our citizens often refer to terrorism as an escalating problem, but I've been working on it since the early 80s, and I don't see that either as a matter of the fears we feel as Americans or in terms of statistics, depending on how you want to count it. But on the other hand, Al-Qaeda remains a powerful organization, and there's some other groups of world reach, world strength, like FARC and Hezbollah, that we are not really dealing with. The new strategy does not try to do anything particularly about FARC or Hezbollah. It's kind of focused on Al-Qaeda, which is reasonable enough. But
is there a reason for that? I mean, what is the reason that we don't focus in on the FARCs and other places, the LETs, even Al-Shabaab or anyone else? Is there a reason we don't get it and we just still continue to stay focused on Al-Qaeda?
I think that it's a matter of who's striking us.
Okay.
So in terms of national security documents, certainly they mention those organizations that you have. But in terms of who's able to hit us, I think the administration feels that it's probably Al-Qaeda that's going to do that most often and most effectively. Hezbollah, for example, ceased taking American hostages. FARC has never quit doing so, but so I can't really explain our diminished interest.
Yeah.
There's no reason for diminished interest in FARC, although they are on a decline. They remain powerful, but they are probably at only two-thirds of the strength they had in about 2006 or 7.
Should, you know, as this strategy talks and talks about the threat we face, I mean, should Americans still see this as a threat, a credible threat on our shores? I mean, we haven't had attack for quite some time. There's been a lot of, you know, possible attacks, a lot of, you know, kind of startup attacks that have been, either killed by the FBI or whatever the case is. But, you know, are we truly facing a threat on our shores right now, or is more of the threat maybe to Americans who are overseas in other areas?
I think that it's a balanced threat between the home theater and overseas. In the 80s and 90s, terrorists always seemed to strike us overseas, and the understanding of most analysts was that this was due to the ease with which that could be done, the exposure of a guy in like Lawrence Foley in Jordan or something. It was just easier to hit him abroad rather than strike a principal here at home. But in the age of Al-Qaeda, there's a particular interest in hitting in Western Europe and in hitting in the United States. And so we are,
and that's not diminishing. I mean, their desire, even after, and a lot of people say after Bin Laden was killed, there was going to be a lot of revenge attacks and everything else. We haven't really seen that happen, so to say. But is that because Al-Qaeda is more of a very long-term strategic planner when it comes to maybe a terrorist attack on U.S. shores? Or what's the reason for that? I mean, or they just talk? Which one?
I think that the revenge after the death of Bin Laden is a reasonable thing to think about. And I noticed in the newspapers in the last day or two, this particular CIA concern that one of their top analysts, who was very close to putting together the information that found Bin Laden, has now exposed him to death threats and their concern. Not that it's hard to tell how severe the threat is, but it's clear the CIA wants to take care of him. Revenge was a problem after we bombed Libya in 86. There were five or six attacks around the world in places distant like Spain, Costa Rica, a foiled attempt in New Jersey, New York, in which Colonel Gaddafi tried to retaliate. So that makes sense, and I think al-Zawahiri and his buddies like Abdel Saif would love to be able to respond if they could. But I think FBI director put it well a number of years ago when he said, we've done three major things since 9/11. We destroyed the network of camps that was exporting terrorists. We're working much more closer with allies, and we've done a better job here at home.
Okay.
And intelligence and policing here at home account for a lot, I think, of the peace we enjoy as citizens now.
So really, some of these things have truly worked. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the plan and maybe the strategies that precede this in terms of building a national counterterrorism center, and we've got a new director on that. But Michael Litter, he's the one who kind of led that initiative to get it up. But all these different things that we have put in place in terms of counterterrorism since maybe 9/11, and maybe before that, we have to give recognition for stuff that was going on before that about Joint Terrorism Task Force or whoever the case were. A lot of this stuff is working.
I think that the domestic picture with policing and intelligence is better. The national security strategy Mr. Obama published in May of last year emphasizes use of money for intelligence to improve the policing at home and to allow communities to start perhaps some new initiatives in de-radicalization or community policing or something. I think that there's probably a deficit of good ideas about how to fight radicalization, but that's at least one that made it into a document last year. There are a variety of measures being taken, and I think that what some have said in recent years that we're safer without being safe completely is probably a good way to put that.
I'm going to take a break on that note. We're talking to Christopher C. Harmon, Dr. Christopher C. Harmon. He's the Major General Matthew C. Horner, Distinguished Chair of Military Theory at the Marine Corps University, and his chair is being sponsored or co-sponsored by the Marine Corps University Foundation. We'll talk a little bit more about what you're teaching at the Marine Corps University as we kind of close out today. I want to hear a little bit about that. We're talking to him about terrorism. He teaches about terrorism at the Marine Corps University and countering terrorism. We'll get into a little bit more about it after this break. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What if I told you that you could learn a new language the same way you learned your first language? With no tedious translation, no useless memorization, and no boring drills. You'd have every right to be skeptical, especially if you struggled with languages in the past. That's why we want to send you a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. You'll find out what U.S. diplomats, more than 10,000 schools, and NASA already know. That this is the world's fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, guaranteed. Call now to request your free CD-ROM and try it with our compliments. Learn a language faster than you ever imagined. Call 1-800-600-6612, and we'll rush you the free Rosetta Stone CD-ROM today. Remember, there's no tedious translation, memorization, or drills, and the Rosetta Stone program offers more than 30 different languages. Call for your free Rosetta Stone demo CD-ROM today and see how easy and effective it really is. Call 1-800-600-6612. That's 1-800-600-6612.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Hi, this is Jim Flysick. Please join me on July 19th at 12 noon for my monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month's program will discuss emerging technologies and their role in federal government technology programs. The panel includes government leaders from the FAA, DHS, and CIA. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum on Tuesday, July 19th at 12 noon, right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Sponsored by Informatica and Riverbed.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. It is estimated that more than 16,000 Americans develop lupus each year. Lupus is an autoimmune disease with symptoms that can include tiredness and aches and pains. Francis Ash Goines, a deputy director at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, says if you recognize the symptoms of lupus in yourself or a family member, you should see a healthcare provider.
We're not saying self-diagnose. What we're saying is if you see some of the symptoms, go to your healthcare provider and get further medical evaluation if needed.
Lupus is more common among African Americans, Asians, Hispanics, and Native Americans. For details, visit www.couldihavelupus.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Grantham University, and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been talking about terrorism, talking about counterterrorism. We're talking about this national strategy of counterterrorism, national strategy for counterterrorism that President Obama and his administration has just released in June of this year. And it goes into a wide ranges of different things that they plan to do to counter the threat of Al-Qaeda and a number of different other elements that are out there who may attack our country or our citizens here or abroad. I'm talking to Dr. Christopher C. Harmon. He is the Major General Matthew C. Horner, Distinguished Chair of Military Theory at the Marine Corps University. And he's co-sponsored by the Marine Corps University Foundation. And with that chair, do they provide the foundation? Are they providing some additional resources in order to fund your chair and fund the research that you're doing, Chris?
They do allow me to do some occasional travel or okay. other kind of research. Much of my work is done right in Quantico, but occasionally I travel for them and speak, for example, to Marines. I was out in Okinawa recently talking to Marine Corps forces, and I get around the Washington, D.C. environment in some ways. And in past years, too, I've worked for the Marines in Iraq and visited Afghanistan, and so I have traveled as part of the chair, too. But chiefly I do research, writing, and teaching. So I've, for example, recently finished a course on what they call small wars and another course for the Marines, the majors at command and staff, on counterterrorism strategies.
Outstanding. You know, as we look at this strategy, now we've got a couple years into this administration, and then we're coming from a previous administration who really had to focus in on kind of building up a lot of the things that we deal with today, the Department of Homeland Security, the National Counterterrorism Center, the President Bush strategy. When you look at two strategies, some people have said that, you know, there hasn't been too much of a difference. I mean, you know, people are kind of continuously going on the same path. Other people say there are some differences. What do you see? Do you see any kind of radical changes between administration and dealing with terrorism?
That's a great question. I think my answer is that the differences in practice have been minimal, but the differences in words and policy statements have been larger. Let me give you a few examples. The new document from the Obama administration, for example, is quite optimistic about the path we're on. They say that we're degrading Taliban and al-Qaeda pretty regularly and successfully. They're proud, naturally, of catching bin Laden. Who wouldn't be? That's outstanding. They're very optimistic about the Arab Spring, and that's something I agree with. I'm an optimistic about it as well. Their view is that the whole challenge of political differences between the view of the terrorists and ours as American citizens is improved now by the rejection of dictatorship in a lot of the Middle Eastern countries, and the fact that those revolutions have not brought into power violent groups such as al-Qaeda or even the less violent but more politically revolutionary such as the Muslim Brotherhood.
Is that the case because you have maybe a younger group who now is possibly seeing the change of democracy? Are these uprisings because people are really kind of sensing, well, listen, let's create a democratic society, let's move away from this kind of terrorism behavior that now has gotten our country sanctioned or cause a number of different issues in our country, and let's be a part of this maybe new world of ideas, of growth, of people profiting, prosperity, and everything else. Is it that is changing, and maybe is possibly why we're seeing this optimism in this document?
Yes, I think so. I think the document, like Mr. Bush used to do, draws a strong distinction between what the terrorists think about their ideas, their ideology, their view of political world, which in this case is a new caliphate. That's distinguished between traditional democratic values. And I think what you see in places like the Egyptian Revolution and perhaps some of the others is a real enthusiasm for those kinds of political principles. And the good news is that it really does show us that we've always said these groups are a distinctive and vicious minority, and they don't really speak for their own countries. And I think the revolutions are showing that to be true. People do not necessarily want a Taliban-type state in their country.
Sure.
And they've had a chance to see Taliban in power once, and they don't like them the second time around for a lot of Afghans or perhaps Pakistanis. They had enough of a dictatorship in some of these other North African countries, and they're more interested in freedoms and civil liberties. And in that sense, then, it really has been a reproof to guys like al-Zawahiri, who spent years, doing books like Knights Under the Prophet's Banner, which has just come out in a expanded second edition in Arabic. They're very serious ideologists, but they're running against the mainstream of what people really want.
You bring up a point in terms of the people are starting to see certain things, or they don't want certain things. But some people have said, well, listen, with some of these countries, we have been allies with some of these leaders, whether it be Yemen or the places. And now, some of these reigns in terms of these presidents or leaders or dictators, they're starting to end. And, they're being, put and having to leave their country or wherever. Are people concerned, and even as you as a counterterrorism expert, are you concerned that as the fall of some of these leaders who used to be allies to the United States, and maybe, of course, the country hadn't gotten itself under control, but they say, listen, we will work with the U.S., are we concerned that some of these alliances will now be diminished, and then we will have countries who will now be, again, safe havens for terrorism?
It's a problem made vivid by the fate of Yemen, because as Mr. Saleh's powers weakened, we've probably lost a good liaison partner with Yemen. We remember that years ago, they actually allowed us to use predators above their skies and to actually kill an important carload of terrorists, which included one American, by the way. And there was a kind of coziness in that partnership, which is an ideal thing in counterterrorism. And we do put at risk that kind of relationship. But when if there is a new government in Yemen, and as there is a new government coming in Egypt, I think we'll be able to work some of those things out.
So the fear shouldn't be there.
I think it's disruptive, okay. But it's less important in the sense that we can build a new intelligence relationship on a bilateral basis, And that is, you know, important, but it's not as important as having good governance in the whole country. The president's new document emphasizes responsive government, and that's intriguing because past language in national security strategies has emphasized, including his own last year, has emphasized the word democracy. It's interesting now to see him shift much more towards this term responsive government. So perhaps that means undemocratic, but still civil and still sane. At any rate, we can cooperate with such a government, you know, like Saudi Arabia, which is not very democratic. But a good partner. Sure. We have superb relations with Jordan. We have good relations with Indonesia on these issues. And I'm glad that Mr. Obama emphasizes bilateral and multilateral relationships in his national security documents and his CT strategy, because those really are key. That's not just rhetoric. The terrorism problem is international, and our solutions to it have got to be multilateral and international.
We're talking about the counterterrorism strategy that was just released in June, the national counterterrorism strategy that this administration just released about how to deal with the threats of Al-Qaeda, how to deal with Al-Shabaab, how to deal with other threats that are coming all around the world against United States, against Western allies, and everything else. We're talking to Dr. Christopher C. Harmon. He is the Major General Matthew C. Horner, Distinguished Chair of Military Theory, and he is co-sponsored by the Marine Corps University Foundation. And he teaches at Marine Corps University, teaching Marines and even probably sailors and other DOD people about terrorism, small wars, insurgencies, and anything else that deals with those kind of topics. We'll be talking a lot more about counterterrorism, and we're going to go into what are the weaknesses possibly of this strategy when we come back for the next segment. You're listening to Derek T. Dortch on Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's Brian McGrath, CIO, Census Bureau, on the Virtualization What Federal Managers Need to Know panel, sponsored by Microsoft and Citrix.
I see us in 3 to 5 years having 70 to 80% of our compute resources virtualized. I see us having a desktop environment that is completely virtualized and allows us to provide those services anywhere, any place, anywhere.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
The benefits of virtualization are clear. Use less energy, generate less heat, take up less space. But before making the leap, make sure you're leveraging your existing Microsoft investment. You may already own key virtualization products like Remote Desktop Services, System Center, and Windows Server 2008 R2 with Hyper-V. These products put you well on your way to a well-managed, virtualized application, desktop, and server environment, moving toward the cloud. To learn more, visit Microsoft.com/govcloud.
Fast and Wrong. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Energy drinks can get you keyed up. With alcohol, you can act without thinking, and a lot of people mix the two. So researcher Cecile Marchinsky of Northern Kentucky University measured what happens. In lab experiments, Marchinsky looked at decision-making and reaction times in college students who had an energy drink with alcohol, just an energy drink, or a drink with neither. Those who had the cocktail were more likely to act fast, but get things wrong. Marchinsky warns,
your judgment is impaired and you make more errors, especially those impulsive errors, such as driving while impaired or drinking longer than you had intended.
The study in the journal Alcoholism, Clinical and Experimental Research was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthSpeed is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit myvillagegreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Zymogen and Metagenics.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday here on Federal News Radio at 10 a.m. Join me this week for my special guest, Jennifer Duplessis, a member of the Kearney team at George Mason Mortgage.
Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. If you'd like to know more about the firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? If a tree falls in the forest and no one is around, does it make a noise? Yep.
Be like the 4 million who switched to GEICO last year, and you too could start saving money. For a free rate quote, visit geico.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
If you know the symptoms and get the facts, you'll know the signs of a heart attack. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if it sounds familiar, call 911.
Pain in your neck, chest,
arms, or jaw,
shortness of breath,
please tell us more. Cold sweats and nausea, tiredness,
it's time to take it serious.
Back pain, stomach pain, shortness of breath, cold sweats, nausea, dizziness. If you know the symptoms and heed the signs, you'll be around for a long, long time. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911.
Learn a song that could save your life. Get a free download at womenshealth.gov/heartattack.
Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911. If any sound familiar, call 911.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
911. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been talking about counterterrorism and talking about the national strategy for counterterrorism that this administration just released in June 2011. It's an interesting document, has a lot of different things about CT tools and capabilities and partnerships and areas of focus that people need to understand. What are the strengths and what are the weaknesses? We're talking to Dr. Christopher C. Harmon. He's an expert on terrorism, counterterrorism, and he is the Major General Matthew C. Horner, Distinguished Chair of Military Theory at the Marine Corps University. And this chair is being co-sponsored by the Marine Corps University Foundation. Chris, you know, as we look at this strategy right here, and we were kind of talking over the break about the strengths and weaknesses of the strategy, you know, there's some stuff in here that's definitely focused on Al-Qaeda, but stuff that's missing is about Africa, Al-Shabaab. I don't see too much about piracy. I don't see some things in there that have become concerns. Is that because people do not look at them as terrorist activity, so to say?
The document that was released on 29 June does take a survey of the world, but it doesn't try to go too deep.
Okay.
It's too short a document, perhaps, to do that thoroughly. It mentions Al-Shabaab, and one of the recent newspaper editorials here in town did so too. There's a lot of interest in an arrest and trial situation related to them. And the paper noted that they aren't a sworn ally of Al-Qaeda. The document that's released in June does declare Al-Qaeda to be the major objective of our efforts. And they do reflect knowledge of the affiliates and where they are and their significance. There are some difficulties with I think the new document. I have mentioned I think there's a real overemphasis on Osama bin Laden and not enough appreciation for al-Zawahiri and some of the other leaders. But the other things, for example, include dealing with the challenge of how to try these people that we catch. The last administration had a view that you can use civil courts, but that in a war with Al-Qaeda, when you catch Al-Qaeda people, military commissions are appropriate. I agree with that, and it is traditional U.S. practice. During the campaign and in the early years here of Mr. Obama's administration, the Department of Justice and others was strong on the fact that these guys had to be tried in civilian settings, which is not really appropriate for Al-Qaeda people. That debate is still going on. I wish the Obama administration had figured this one out. So the new document calls for a durable legal framework for counterterrorist operations. and a good.
But we don't even know what that really means right now, do we?
We don't, because what they've done is kept themselves open to both civilian trials and military tribunals. They are, in effect, doing now exactly what the Bush administration did. And so I think that there's the lack of clarity there, both for all their lawyers, but for where we are as citizens, has been a bit of a problem. In the most recent case, they got a guy who was not al-Qaeda. He was aboard a Navy ship. He's now being brought in for a civilian trial within the United States. And there are some senators, Mitch McConnell and others, that are upset about it. But the administration's view is not unreasonable. The administration saying, we've often tried terrorists in the U.S. In courts.
In previous years,
it has previous happened. Years, both parties have done that when they've been in power. The hardest part, Derek, has been the question of whom we're at war with. And to the extent that we've been at war with al-Qaeda, we catch someone in those cases, in those areas, those guys don't need to go into civilian trials. And for a lot of reasons, they should be dealt with in a humane way by military commissions. And they can be detained under international law as long as the war against al-Qaeda is going. And it must continue. I hope that there's not anyone in the White House now who thinks they're ready to announce the end of the war against al-Qaeda, because that would be a blunder.
With all of that, I mean, so what we're saying, the vagueness also kind of plays to the strategy in which saying, depending on what kind of classification this person comes under, we want to have all the tools on the table. I mean, do you think we'll continue to see, no matter who's in power, this kind of continue to be vague of maybe we can do civilian, maybe military tribunals, or think no one wants to dedicate to just one particular, even though it says have a dedicated legal framework, it seems almost that it plays to maybe we shouldn't have that.
It's been confusing. Mr. Holder and Mr. Cole at the Department of Justice clearly hope for civilian trials, but they had to back off on that early this year. And as I've argued, it is inappropriate for them to want to take guys captured from al-Qaeda in a war situation and try them that way. And I think a lot of the people at Guantanamo deserve to remain in military custody. And by the way, the release of some of these guys has been a big blunder, because they keep turning up again back in al-Qaeda organizations. In fact, some of them went back to Yemen and are central to the refounding, the founding there of the al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula group.
Because a lot of times, once they're out of our hands, a lot of these other governments are not putting them in jail. They're just sending them out free to do what they want to do.
That's right. The new document does not discuss the problem of renditions, and I'd like to say a word about that. Renditions were done by Mr. Clinton and other presidents in the past, and there's nothing particularly foul about them. They've attained a kind of bad reputation because they've now been identified with, first of all, third countries, and second, torture.
So human rights people have now kind of been up in arms about what are you doing with these renditions?
Yeah, and the fact is that if you don't torture, and of course torture is an obscenity and we should all oppose it, if you don't torture, there's nothing particularly wrong with seizing someone who's got a very thick criminal terrorist file and getting them back to a place where, assuming they won't be tortured, where they can be tried in their own country or in the site of the crime. There's nothing wrong with that. And renditions have been an important tool for us, both for criminals, especially drug dealers from Latin America, and terrorists for many years. And in fact, in 2001, the Department of Justice at a senior level made a speech. It was George Tenet at CIA, and he made a comment about how many terrorists had been rendered back to the U.S. in recent years. And, of course, that was under a Democratic administration. Sure. It's one of those fairly aggressive things which is not mentioned in the new strategy, which I want to address, as I have today, just frankly, because the term is not well understood, and there's nothing necessarily illegal or immoral about it. Extradition's better, but in certain cases, a forcible rendition has been done. And by the way, that's why Carlos the Jackal's in jail in Paris right now, because France rendered him out of Somalia.
Right.
And that's why Abdullah Öcalan is in jail in Turkey, because they got him out of Kenya. And sometimes extradition is not possible.
do you think with the strategy and maybe being so vague, do you think the lack of clarity on some of these things, do you think that harms our efforts when it comes to counterterrorism rather than helps it?
I think there's pros and cons to the document, but that by and large, the president's national security strategy of May 2010 was better for several reasons. The language in this one is a little bit flaccid, and there's some important issues I hope would have been covered that aren't covered. One of the important ones, for example, is how we change our image abroad, and a related question, what we do about de-radicalization at home. On that first one, there's a lot of exhortations in the document to changing our view, the way we're viewed in the Muslim world, being better at strategic communications. But in fact, there aren't too many new ideas in it.
And let me hold you right there, Chris. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back on the fourth segment, I want to pick right back where you just left off, because I think that was one of the most important points that I wanted to get, that we don't see enough of how to deal with the mindset, change the paradigm, change the thought process of these people. Because how can you end terrorism if you don't get into the minds and say, put down your weapons or put down your suicide vests, and now let's just talk this out? We're going to talk about this on the next part of Fed Access. We're talking to Dr. Christopher C. Harmon. He is the Major General Matthew C. Horner, Distinguished Chair of Military Theory at the Marine Corps University. It's co-sponsored by the Marine Corps University Foundation. He's an expert on terrorism, on small wars, on insurgency, and he's teaching Marines and other DOD people about it. We're talking to him right now on Fed Access. We'll be right back after this break.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit capitalareafoodbank.org.
For over 80 years, Motorola has been committed to keeping Americans safe. Today, Motorola's interoperable communication systems are built to open standards so federal, state, and local agencies can work together in emergency situations and be their best in the moments that matter. That's why first responders and others dedicated to keeping citizens safe choose Motorola, because they know Motorola always puts public safety first, just like they do. To learn more, visit MotorolaSolutions.com.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The federal government is adding on to its data.gov open government portal with a new focus on the nation's energy use. Energy.data.gov contains a collection of apps and tools about how to manage and save energy. By the end of the year, officials plan to add detailed data about how much energy federal buildings and facilities use, with historical data sets going back to 1975. They're hoping energy entrepreneurs will use the data to create new breakthrough technologies.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
The Department of Defense has released its strategy for operating in cyberspace. Deputy Secretary of Defense William Lynn said during a speech at the National Defense University, DOD suffered one of its worst data losses ever during a cyber attack back in the spring. 24,000 files were stolen from a defense industry computer network in a single intrusion. The strategy indicates information flow was given priority over information security, and that has to be rectified. I'm J.J. Green.
Sir, we have multiple contacts bearing 050 at 30 miles.
When the Navy and Coast Guard needed a radar to perform critical missions, they chose the TRS 3D radar from EADS North America. Built to cut through clutter in a busy coastal environment, the TRS 3D detects multiple surface and air threats simultaneously, so our nation's defenders can respond quickly and keep us safe.
Sir, estimated intercept time is 2 minutes.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
ACT IAC is looking for a few good members. Do you have what it takes? Are you a techie or a govie? Do you want to make a positive impact? Can you bring fresh ideas to the table? Join ACT IAC today and help solve government's toughest IT challenges while advancing your career and making great new friends and contacts. To become a member, visit actgov.org. That's actgov.org. Or call 703-208-4800. ACT IAC wants you.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris, weekday mornings 6 to 10.
Blake Hall, the co-founder and CEO of TroopSwap.
We found that many businesses that wouldn't offer deals on Groupon or Living Social will offer deals to the military community. And we've also found that oftentimes the businesses that would offer them on other sites will offer them at better prices for our community because they want to give back.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch from Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been having a real interesting conversation about terrorism, about counterterrorism, about how to kind of deal with these issues that seem to never, ever go away. There's a national strategy for counterterrorism that was just released on, I believe, June 29th, Dr. Harmon, that was just released on June 29th from this administration. It goes into a number of different things about how to deal with the process and the problem of terrorism. I have an studio with me, Dr. Christopher C. Harmon. He's the Major General Matthew C. Horner, Distinguished Chair of Military Theory at the Marine Corps University. Which is co-sponsored by the Marine Corps University Foundation. He's an expert on terrorism and counterterrorism issues, has written some books about it, and has studied this for, back since the 80s, 70s, huh?
Since the early 80s.
We were talking about de-radicalizing people and talking about how do we change the image of the United States, and this is not being dealt with in this document in a sufficient way. Why is that? I mean, why have we moved away from talking about changing the image and possibly going after the process of de-radicalization? Me and you were talking before we really got started about Al-Qaeda and other places are using high-tech equipment. They're having magazines like Inspire. They have stuff on YouTube. They have all kind of social media. Why aren't we doing the same to counter this?
It's a question that intrigued Susan Collins and Joseph Lieberman over in the Senate, and they did a recent report called Ticking Time Bomb based on their studies of the Fort Hood case, where they really wanted to understand the mindset of the doctor, Major Hassam, who murdered a bunch of Americans there. And it was also closely studied by the New York City Police Department, which has a really remarkable intelligence section. And they did a major report in 07 on radicalization. And they talked, for example, about the role in terrorism of the spiritual sanctioner. So no matter how guys get together in a cluster or a group or a terrorist cell, no matter who's the operational chief, there's a man who works the issues of mind and soul. There's a spiritual sanctioner of some kind who allows them to think that the abuse and murder of innocents, which is what terrorism is somehow a successful engagement in politics. Your question is hard. Your question is why don't we address it more thoroughly? I think that usually it's a kind of disinterest or embarrassment over political warfare. We're concerned about not looking like we're in a political war with folks. And we don't really do much by way of the battle of ideas, even though we often talk about it.
Right.
We're not systematically engaged in that. We don't have a bureaucracy in our government that really has the lead in political warfare. And our limited bureaucracy that does public diplomacy has not done very well, and I'm interested that the new document doesn't even use the words public diplomacy. At home, we're a little shy about our education process in civics. I'm intrigued that even on the right, or center right, the Heritage Foundation, which is a superb think tank where scholars like Matt Spaulding work on these issues, and over at the Washington Post, where they recently did a staff editorial, that both these kinds of entities can view the problem of civics and say, we're not teaching our young people about the principles of democracy, the difficulties in power sharing, the differences between, you know, majority rule protecting minorities and just majority rule, the distinctive character of the way elections and sane politics allow power to turn over between different parties instead of producing a war, the notion of civil society. A lot of these things could be taught much better in American schools, and I think that, Derek, would really help as American kids consider, you know, the radicalization influences they run into. And we are having a problem. I mean, they think now that some 30 Somali kids have vanished and gone overseas to join in foreign, what they call jihads. I mean, so it is an ongoing struggle here at home. And I don't think we've been very committed to good, clear, intensive civics and other kinds of influences that would help with de-radicalization.
With all of that, you know, and we look at Pakistan right now, and we look at a deteriorating situation. I mean, you know, we had a leader, Osama bin Laden, you know, hiding there for how many ever years. We seem to, now we're going to cut funding possibly to them. We seem to have a number of people there who seem to not like the U.S. and maybe some things that have been going on in the country. Is the deterioration of something like that, a country who seems to have a very hotbed of terrorism, you know, is that being addressing the strategy enough in terms, and this kind of goes back to maybe winning hearts and minds, where people are seeming to kind of turn against and may be willing to hide out terrorists even more?
I was very disturbed when, like everyone in America, when we discovered that bin Laden was hiding in Pakistan. There was also a disturbing pattern of Pakistani support to international terrorists, especially Kashmiris, and some of those who've been attacking India for other reasons besides the independence of Kashmir. It is very, very troubling, and I'm glad to see the administration reducing military aid to Pakistan. I think that's exactly the right response. Some in Congress talked about this after 1 May when bin Laden was killed, but they weren't quite as forceful as they should be, and I'm glad the administration's now moving on that. There is a real problem with Pakistan. There's a very short list we keep of state sponsors of terrorism, and it's a bad thing to be on it, and it affects commercial, diplomatic relations, travel, and everything else. And right now, there's both problems with Venezuela and Pakistan, and either one of them, in theory, could end up on that short list if certain things aren't done well. You can't, under either traditional international law or modern international law, you have no right to shelter on your territory violent groups that go across border, make attacks, and come back. And that applies across the board, always has. And so Pakistan's in some serious violation of law when they allow these groups to exist, not to mention when they support them.
We have to go right there, Chris. I mean, it's so much to cover. I mean, we could talk about this, and we're going to have you come back.
I'd be happy
soon,
to
cover this even more, because we just start getting into it. We were talking to Dr. Christopher C. Harmon. He's the Major General Matthew C. Horner, Distinguished Chair of Military Theory at the Marine Corps University, which is co-sponsored by the Marine Corps University Foundation. Let me say, simplify to all the Marines out there. And Chris, thank you for coming on Fed Access.
Derek, it's always a pleasure.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFPD. Your source for federal news now.